This is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Mem Gimel of Sefer Yecheskel, chapter 43 of the book of Yecheskel. And the chapter really comes in three fairly distinct parts. The first part is Yecheskel has another vision of Hashem in some way. Then there's a discussion of the Mizbeach, and then there's a discussion of the dedication of the Mizbeach, of the Chanukat HaMizbeach. So there will be some measurement issues, and those also are unclear, as there have been in the past couple of chapters. But there will be many other issues that come up that are clearer or more easily spoken about and understood, and we will try to focus on those. So Pasuk Aleph starts with Vayolucheni al Hashar, Shar Asher Poneh Derech HaKadim. He led me to a gate. Rashi says he returned me to the eastern gate, and then Pasuk Bed, Vinei Kevod Elokei Yisrael Ba Miderech HaKadim, and the glory of Hashem is coming from the east. And the sound of it was like the sound of much rushing water, and the land was lit up by the glory of Hashem. So it seems to be a vision of a return of Hashem to the Beit HaMikdash. So once Yechezkel is seeing the future Beit HaMikdash, and we've pointed out before that some of these things were in the second Beit HaMikdash, but many were not, so there is an assumption that which is not will, in some sense, be fulfilled in a third Beit HaMikdash. So now we see the Kavod of Hashem coming back to it. In addition, though, this phrase, Kol Mayim Rabim, is a phrase that appeared earlier in Yechezkel when he described the Merkava, when he described the chariot and the movement. So he said, when it moves, you have the Kol Mayim Rabim. So here you have the movement, and therefore here's the Kol Mayim Rabim. What that would mean in its fullest sense, so we've spoken about it a little bit before, we speak about it here too, I think it would mean something like that when the Kavod Hashem is in place and is whatever the words Kavod Hashem mean, whatever the glory of God means, but when there is no particular action going on, it's all sort of functioning well, so then there's silence, so then there's just quiet, and there's not a need for movement and action and whatever that it would be. But the Kol Mayim Rabim, the sound of rushing water, is a sound, I think, of many different things happening all at the same time, and that's the image and that's the sound that you have. And then, we have that umikivodo, ve'aretehira mikivodo, and the land was lightened up from his glory. So the Psikta de Rav Kahana mentions that an interesting discussion between Rabbi Shimon Yehotzadak, and he sends to Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman to ask him a question. He says, I've heard that you talk about Haggadah, stuff like Haggadah, like matters of thought and Jewish thought and Jewish ideas. So where does the light go out to the world? So nowadays, in our secular world, we would say light comes from the sun. But that's not quite the answer, because the light of the sun is the light of a fission reaction, or a reaction in the sun, and that produces heat, which produces light, but that's not where the whole notion of light comes from. So he answers, God puts on a white garment, and the whole world shines from the shining of that garment. He says, and he says it to him in a whisper. So he says, why is he in the whisper? That's a pasuk. That God puts on light like a dress or like a garment, and he spreads out the he spreads out the heavens like a tent. So why are you saying it to me in a whisper? So he says, I heard it in a whisper, so I'm telling it to you in a whisper. So, and then he says, if it wasn't for the fact that Rabbi Yitzchak had said it in public, you couldn't say it. So what did they used to say about where the light comes from? So Rabbi Brechia says, they used to say that it came from the Beit HaMikdash. That's where light would go out to the world. And they quote our pasuk, because they assume that Kol Kol Mayim Rabim is Hashem is coming back to Hashem is coming back to the Beit HaMikdash, and that's what the Kol Mayim Rabim is taking him to. Ve'ir ha'aretz mikvodo, and the land is being lit by his glory. So there's some idea of the land, of the need for light, and the pasuk is telling us where the light is coming from, and the whole notion of light in the world is coming from there. So pasuk gimel, uchmar'eha mar'eha shara'iti kamar'eha shara'iti bevo'i l'shachetet ha'ir, umar'ot kamar'eha shara'iti al nahar kevar va'el polo panai. And the whole thing comes with a vision, uchmar'eha mar'eha shara'iti, like the vision that I saw, like the vision that I saw when I came to destroy the city, and other visions, like the vision that I saw on nahar kevar, and I fall on my face. So Rashi says there are nine times that it's written mar'ot in these psukim. Right, that's what she says. Nine times. I didn't find all nine. I found there are five or six, but he's noting, as the Radak also notes, the repetition of the word kamara, like the vision. So Rashi says that it means to imply, to tell us that this vision is mediated through many different visions, meaning it's a vision like the vision like the vision. It's not a direct vision. He's not seeing it directly. And that was true of all of the prophets. And that's why I say the general, the Nevi'im, saw through an aspaklaria she'ina mi'ira, that they saw it through a lens, and the lens wasn't bright, didn't give them a clear vision. And so all that they managed to get out of it was not clear. What they managed to get out of it was covered over in some way. But Moshe Rabbeinu saw it through only one such mara, and that's why his vision was clear, and that's why I say he saw through an aspaklaria hami'ira. As Rashi says, the Radak says the reason why he used the word vision so much, mara so much, the Radak thinks that the word there are many references to Mar'eh to tell you that it changes a lot. And we've noticed that with the Merkabah. When he sees the Merkabah, there are much of it that stays the same and some of it that differs. So then the reference to many Marot is that Yechezkel is saying, or signaling us, reminding us, that it's not one consistent vision. It's not that there is a Mar'eh and he's seeing it. He sees it in a lot of different forms. So either way, the point of this Pasuk Gimel would be to tell us that Yechezkel is aware that his vision is not perfect. It's not a seeing as it really is, the seeing in a way that means something to him, but that has to be modified. Never think that this is exactly what it says and what it is. Pasuk Dalet, Uchvod Hashem Ba'al Labayit Derech Shavash Panav Derech HaKadim, and Hashem comes from the east. One could probably spend some time thinking about why it would be necessarily from the east, or why the vision would see Hashem coming from the east. But Hashem comes from the east. Pasuk Hei Vatisaini Ruach Vativieini Lachatzera Penimi Minei Malei Kvod Hashem Habayit. So a wind comes and it takes me to the inner courtyard, and Malek Vod Hashem and Abayit, and now the glory of Hashem has filled the house. So Vatisaini, the Radak points out that until now, in this series of visions of him seeing the Beit HaMikdash being in its rebuilt form and getting the measurements of it, so Ad Hina Vayivieini Vayotzieini, as he brought me and he took me, so it's on the man, the angel, that is showing him the entire vision, so that's who's bringing him. But now that he sees the Merkavah, he goes back to the phrasing of Vatisaini, that it carried me. So that's where that points out. It's just a linguistic note, Vatisaini Ruach, but it's an important note because I think what it's saying is, or it's suggesting is, that even in the vision world, there's a difference for Yechezkel when he's interacting just with a Malach, or he's interacting in some way directly with Kvod Hashem, because in directing with Kvod Hashem, even within the vision, the movement is different. Meaning, you can have a vision in which you're walking in the vision, or a vision in which you're just transported places. So I think that that's part of the point that Radak would have been making, that the experience of being in the presence of Hashem, or Kvod Hashem, is one that changes the nature of movement and all that goes with it, even though it's only a vision. So now he's in the Chatzar HaPinimi, and it's full of, and the Kvod Hashem is filling the house. It's filling the Beit HaMikdash. V'ashma midaber elai mehabayit. And I hear a voice speaking to me from within the house. So midaber, Rashi points out in Chumash that the phrasing of midaber, Rashi says here too, sorry, malel imi, that it's speaking to itself. And it's a way that the Torah, the Tanakh, expresses honor for Hashem by saying it's not God was speaking to me, but that God was sort of speaking to himself, as it were, and I was allowed to hear, and it went out to me. This is touches on a topic that I've brought up on other occasions, and that continually is worth thinking about, is the extent to which communication from Hashem to a prophet is directed to that prophet, or is it just that that prophet finds a way to hear, to tap into words of Hashem or messages from Hashem or ideas from Hashem that are sort of out there all the time? So is it a voice with a capital V that's always out there, and then this Navi finds a way or comes to understand how it is that one goes about being worthy of hearing such things, or is it that Hashem decides to speak to this Navi? So at least in this context, the word of midaber in Rashi's interpretation would tend towards the more naturalistic version of prophecy, that it's always happening, and then the question is who's going to be able to tap into it or not. But it's more complicated because, as I pointed out, there are other things that seem to be personal and seem to be the kind of thing that this Navi needs to hear at this time, and that Hashem is directing it towards this Navi in that way. So it's a question I don't think you can answer unless you're unless and until you're a Navi, but it's one worth pointing out. So here, Vayomri Elai, so this is what the voice says, Ben Adam et Mekom Kisiv et Mekom Kapot Raglai, Asher Eshkan Sham Betok Bnei Yisrael La'olam, Lo Yitamu Od Bet Yisrael Shem Kodshi, Heimo Malcheihem Biznutam, V'Figrei Malcheihem Bamotam. So, the voice says, Ben Adam, this Mekom Kisi, the place for my throne and the place for my feet, that I'm going to reside there among the Jewish people forever, and they're no longer, they're never again going to defile my house and my name. Beit Yisrael, well, not my house, my name. They, their kings, with all of their ways of abandoning me, so that's not going to happen anymore. Right? Biznutam, Radak says, Shayuzonim Achre Elohim Achrein, they would find other gods and other idols, and they would even do them in the Beit HaMikdash. So none of that is going to happen anymore. That's what Hashem is saying. Now, in terms of referring to Beit HaMikdash as Mekom Kisi and Mekom Kapot Raglai, the Radak refers us to a Radak of his, to a comment of his in Yirmiyahu, where he speaks about the Beit HaMikdash and the notion that the Beit HaMikdash is the seat of the throne of glory. And he says, again, the important piece to think about what I'm about to say, or to understand, or to remember about what I'm about to say, is that the Radak is a rationalist. I just pointed this out in another context, and it is something that I don't know that we notice enough or remember enough. The Radak is a rationalist, such a rationalist, that when the Maimonidean controversy broke out in the early 1200s, and there were those who thought the Rambam's writings should be banned, or should be rejected. People shouldn't be allowed to read them and to learn them and to know them. So the Radak, it was old by that time, went from Provence, where he lived, from the south of France, and he went through Spain trying to get people to write letters saying, no, you're allowed to learn the Rambam, even though the Rambam says whatever it was that bothered people in the Provence. The Rambam really was an observant Jew, and a firm Jew, and a Jew who we can trust, and therefore you should be allowed to read his writings. So the Radak is in the spectrum of rationalism versus non-rationalism. The Radak is much more of a rationalist than not. And yet here, he says that the definition of the Beit HaMikdash is Mekom, as the place of the Kisei HaKavod, of God's glory and honor, and it's the place of the where God's legs reside. So he says that's all to show you that God is involved in the world, and God has an impact on the world, and God's Hashkacha is in the world, and it all extends out from the Beit HaMikdash. What he's saying is that there's something real about the presence of God in the Beit HaMikdash, more so than in other places, and that's where it all stems from. So that whole idea is what many people would call a metaphysical idea, right? And it's saying that the Beit HaMikdash has a real standing. So there are those who like to deny that rationalists would say such things or believe such things, but the Radak is here referring you to saying that, and I think it's an important piece of knowing that even rationalists tend to believe in nature and tend to believe in the world working without miracles to as much of an extent as possible. There's that well-known Rambam where the Rambam says that that the Mishnah and Avot, which tells us that God created certain things, Benesh Mashot, late on the sixth day of creation. So the Rambam says that is God putting into nature, into the world, all of the future miracles that will happen. So that being true, if that's true, it could lead you to think that what that means is that God doesn't do miracles anymore in the sense of miracles, that there is no such thing as miracles anymore. So here, this Radak with this Hashkacha idea and God's presence being more there in some way than in other places, so that's the other context, the other way of thinking about it and understanding it, and it's a part of, I think, even the rationalist view of Judaism. So that's what Hashem says. And then he goes on to say, "B'titam sipam et sipi u'mezuzatam etzel mezuzati v'akir b'ini v'nehem v'timu et shem kachi b'tu'avotam asher asu v'achal otam be'api." So he says part of the problem was that the king's palace bordered on the Beit HaMikdash. There was a wall, Radak points out in Malachim, you see this as well, there was a wall, a thin wall that differentiated the king's palace from the Beit HaMikdash. They're right bordering on each other. So then when the king is worshipping idols where he's worshipping idols and doing all these terrible things, So that spills over into the Beit HaMikdash and eventually leads to its destruction. And now what will happen in the future will be that they will put all of that stuff away, far away from Hashem. And then Hashem will live among us forever, will reside, not live, but reside among us, and the Shechina will be in the Beit HaMikdash. So that's the first step. So now Pasuk Yud says, Ataven Adam Hageret Bnei Yisrael Et Habayin V'Kalamu Me'Avonotehem U'Madadu Et Tochnit. So he says to him, and now that I'm telling you this will happen, the Kavod will come back, and the Kavod will come back, and all those things will happen, the glory of Hashem will return to the Mikdash. So tell the Jewish people what the Bayit will look like. So we've seen much of that already, but here he's going to focus more on the Mizbeach. We'll see it in a second, right? So, and he says, V'yikalamu me'avonotehem u'madadu et tochnit, and they will be embarrassed of their various sins, and then they will measure the setup of the Bayit. They will measure the plan. And if they're really embarrassed, this is what he says, if they're really embarrassed of what they've done, and you make known to them the detailed plan, all of its plans and structures and laws and everything and all of its shapes, so let them know all that. And let them, and write it down before them, and let them v'yishmeru et kol tzurotav. Let them keep it. Let them watch it carefully. Let them keep track of it. Zot Torat HaBayit al Rosh Ahar kol givulo saviv saviv kodesh kodeshim. Zot Torat HaBayit. And this is the shape of the house all around, and all around the mountain, and it's all kodesh kodeshim. And this is the way to think of the bayit. So that seems to be a concluding document, and part of what it says is, and it's similar to what you have in Hosea, where Hosea says, "Unishalma parim sifateinu." So it's similar to that. They're being told that the shape of the Beit HaMikdash, knowing the measurements, knowing the things that we saw in the last few chapters, knowing all that, having that all written and learning and thinking about it. So it seems like so the pasuk in Hosea says, "Unishalma parim sifateinu," that in some way, by speaking about sacrifices, we can replace them to a certain extent. So that's much of the source for tefillah, for davening, right? And so there's a tanchuma, tetzav, that says that these psukim are telling us something about that the structure of the Beit HaMikdash is similar, that learning the structure of the Beit HaMikdash and thinking about it, and thinking about how it will be rebuilt, can also in some way replace the existence or the presence of the Beit HaMikdash, and that therefore there's a value to doing it. So it's interesting though, I mean it's not interesting, I think that it's worth stressing that when we say that, what we don't mean is that doing it is exactly the same as. So it's not as if, let's say there was a Beit HaMikdash and somebody would say, well, why should I bother going to bring a nidavah to Hashem, a sacrifice of a nidavah to Hashem? I'll just say it. And in Nishama Parim Svatenu, see here too, there is no indication, there is no implication, there's no hint that if we just think about the Beit HaMikdash, that's as if we have it. It's the closest we're going to get, and therefore they're being told to keep hold of these tzurot, of these shapes, of these forms, of these measurements, and again, I've pointed out several times that I'm not sure that means that these are the exact measurements you have to have, so that's not clear, but what we are being told is that knowing this and following this and thinking about this will have important relevance to us coming as close as we possibly can to the presence of the Beit HaMikdash in our lives. So that's what Yechezkel is being told. That's the value of the vision, the importance of the vision that we have here. So Pasuk Yigimel goes on now and goes on to finish up or to add one more, another piece to our understanding of the Bayit. Ve'ele midot ha-mizbeach ba'amot, and these are the measurements of the Mizbeach. Ama, ama v'tofach, and each ama, remember, is an ama and a tefach, v'chik ha'ama v'ama rochav u'gvula el sfata safiv zeret ha'echad, v'zeh gav ha'mizbeach. So v'chik ha'ama, so JPS points out, the JPS translation points out that this again is not going to be so clear the next several psukim, but it seems like you have an ama deep and an ama wide in which you have around the edge, and it's sort of a rim to the Beit HaMikdash, and it's got a rim of a zeret of a handspan, and that's going to be the edge of the Mizbech. Look, it's going to be 2 amot up from the ground, and the Medrash points out or notes that Umecheka Aretz means from the bosom of the earth, and therefore suggests that the Mizbech itself is Cheka Aretz. Right? There's an introduction to Echa Rabba that says it, that the Beit HaMikdash is in some way the bosom of the earth, that the Beit HaMikdash, and it's not just the Korbanot, it's the Beit HaMikdash, it would be the Beit HaMikdash as a place of Hashem's presence in the world, going out to the world, it would be all of those things coming together, and that's why it would be thought of as Chek HaAretz. So, Mechek HaAretz, the Azara HaTachtona, Shnayim Amot, V'roch HaVamah, Echad, two Amot, high, and then it's 1 amah wide, V'Hazara HaKtana, V'Hazara HaGdola, 4 amot, another 4 amot, also an in an amah, V'HaHarel, 4 amot, and then going up to the main Mizbeach, or the central Mizbeach, would be 4 amot, Mehariel, Ulamala, HaKranot, 4. And then above that, you have 4 kranot, 4 corners of the Mizbeach, where you would sprinkle the blood and things like that that you would do on the Kranot HaMizbeach. So, Mehariel, 12 Orech, Mishnemisre Rokhav, Ravua, El Arba'at, Rivav. So this Ariel, this is the central Mizbeach, in Yecheskel vision, is going to be 12 amot, by 12 amot square to its four sides. Hazara arba asrei orech by arba asrei rochav. So then the next level is going to be 14 by 14. El arbaat riva eha to its four corners. V'hagavul saviv otach atzi ha'ama v'achek la'ama saviv u'ma'alotehu pinot kadim. And then the Azara is 14 by 14, we said, and to its four corners, and then it's got a gvul, a border around it, which is a half amah, and then it's got a chayk, which is an amah all around, and it's got a ramp facing right at Kevesh, facing to the east, the way you get up to it. So, the one of the questions asking, even about a Mizbeach, is to what extent are the measurements of Mizbeach set? So there are discussions in Zvachim about whether or not you have to make a Mizbeach the size that you make it all the time, and it seems like not. So here would be a good example where the Navi says the Mizbeach is going to be a certain way, and it would seem that it doesn't have to be that way. There might have been a vision that was the way it was going to be, but that would be under a certain set of circumstances, but that the possibility would exist that other circumstances could come into play that would then make that shape of the Mizbeach unnecessary to be actualized, seems like a reasonable possibility or an acceptable possibility within the presentation. So now the Navi moves on. So he told you the Mizbeach, and he goes on, Vayomer Eli ben Adam ko amar Hashem Elokim. I want to say, I'm not going to talk here about the name Ariel. It's a name that people give to their children based on, to some extent, this discussion. That's a whole discussion you can have, but we have to move on. But that's an area of further research to think about what the name of the Mizbeach as Ariel would be and what value that it has. Vayomer Eli ben Adam ko amar Hashem Elokim. Eilechu kota Mizbeach biyom he'asoto. This is the way you should handle the Mizbeach on the day that it is made, that it is dedicated. La'lot alav olah v'lizrok alav dam, in order to be able to offer sacrifices on it, to sprinkle blood on it, or throw blood on it. El ha'kohanim ha'levi'im asherhem mizeret tzedok, you will give to the kohanim, the kohanim ha'levi'im. That's another topic that we can't get into in a shiur like this, but to think about is why and when the Torah and the Navi, the Torah and Tanakh, refer to kohanim as also being levi'im, and when they don't bother to mention that. So here, it's the Kohanim we're talking about, because they're the ones who are going to offer sacrifices for sure, and yet their role as Levi'im is being stressed here. So I would say there's one of the possibilities, the stress on the role of Levi'im, is when you want to mention that the Kohanim, when you want to make clear the Kohanim aren't just in terms of offerings in the Beit HaMikdash, but that really Kohanim are about, their role is about teaching Torah and keeping people close to God. So if you want to speak about a new Beit HaMikdash and a new Mizbeach, it might be that you would choose to stress that even though they're being given here a sacrifice to offer, and that's certainly part of their role, that you want to stress that that's not their whole role, it's just that's what they're doing now within the larger function of being Levi'im, Mizeret Tzedok, going hearkening back to the original early Beit HaMikdash when everything was good, HaKrovim Elai Ne'um Hashem Elokim L'Sheretaini, who are close to me to serve me, and you give them a Parben Bakar L'Chatat, you give them one bull as a chatat. Lakachta midamo menatal k'arba kanotav ve'el arba pinot ha'azara ve'el kagavul saviv v'chiteta oto v'chipartahu. So you take the blood and you give it on the four, put a laser on the four corners of the Mizbeach, and then the four corners of the Azara here, meaning probably the base that we referred to before as the Azara. And the whole idea of the Azara is a base of this Mizbeach, leaves open the question, or raises the question, allows us to wonder at the possibility that the word Azara, then, we talk about Azara like the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash, but here the Azara is the base of the Mizbeach, so it might be the phrase of Azara in general is to mean a place that serves as the base of the function of a more significant function. The Azara of the Beit HaMikdash, where certain people are allowed to wander and to go, and it might be that it serves as the base of the Beit HaMikdash in general. And then by doing this, you're going to be mechaper on the Mizbeach. You're going to prepare the Mizbeach and properly dedicate the Mizbeach for its role in this future Beit HaMikdash. And then you take this par and you burn it, right? Because this is a par hanisraf. It's a communal sacrifice, and therefore it's one of the parim hanisrafim. It's one of the chataot, one of the sacrifices that are all burned rather than eaten. Pasuk chavbet uvayom hasheni tekriv seir izim tamim lechatat. And on the second day, then you're not going to give a par anymore for a chatat. You're going to give a seir, a goat for a chatat, and v'chitu al mizbeach kasher chitu bapar. And they'll do it again, like they did with the par. And then v'chalot chamechatay. And when you finish atoning for it, or cleansing it, or preparing it, then you're all going to give a bull, the ayal minatzam tamim, and a ram, also tamim, without any blemish. You'll offer them before Hashem. And they'll become an ola, and you'll put salt on them, and they'll become an ola. So for 7 days, you'll do a sa'ir for a chatat, and then two olot, a par and an ayal as olot. For 7 days, you'll be cleansing, atoning, preparing. JPS English has purging the altar, although it doesn't seem to have any tumah to it. It's not clear what you're purging it. If you're preparing it, and you'll prepare it and make it ready. When the days are done, then Kohanim will, from that day on, offer korbanot, all the korbanot you want, and I will retake the yitzchem, I will want you, I will be happy with you, and we will have a full and a fruitful and a functional relationship. That's what will happen once the Mizbeach has been fully dedicated. I would point out that the idea of dedicating a Mizbeach, the idea of dedicating a Mizbeach is interesting, reminds me of a comment by the Ramban in Chumash in Bamidbar, where the Nisi'im have a dedication of the Mishkan. So the Ramban just says that Hashem did not necessarily plan to have a dedication ceremony for the Mishkan. He just thought you'd just start working there. The Kohanim might have needed a dedication. That's true throughout history because they're starting a new job. They may need to bring a special korban to ready them for their human task. But the idea that objects would need dedication, so that wasn't so clear, that wasn't so necessary according to the Ramban. That's what the Ramban says. And but then when the Nisi'im said they wanted to, so Hashem said fine. And Hashem allowed it. So that would be an example of something that I'm always interested by, which is where Hashem has one plan, and people have another plan, and Hashem follows people's plan. So there's two ways in which that can happen. One way which can happen is that people have a bad plan, and Hashem follows it nonetheless. Hashem allows it to go through. And that's sort of just Hashem giving us our free will and allowing our free will to lead us in the wrong direction. But the world can be changed by that in positive ways or in negative ways, or usually in negative ways because it's the wrong direction. The other possibility, the other way that it can work is that Hashem has a certain plan, and then we have a different plan, and Hashem says that's also a good plan. And that's not a mistake or not an error. That's Hashem being happy about it, and Hashem welcoming it, and that feeds in to the possibility that there are many areas where Hashem would be happy for us to become partners and for us to work with Hashem in shaping the future of the world. So if the Ramban is right, this would seem to be the second kind, because here Yechezkel doesn't know what the future is going to be like, and Yechezkel having a vision of the future, and Hashem inserts into that vision of the future a dedication ceremony for the Mizbeach. So it would seem to be that it would seem to be that Hashem is telling us that, again, assuming the Ramban's reconstruction of what happened in the Dor HaMidbar in the generation of the desert was right, here Hashem would be saying, that idea that those Nisim had, it's so good, we're going to do it in the future again, you're going to have a dedication for the Mizbeach and ready for the Mizbeach for its job. So we have in this parak, a much more cheerful parak, we had some technical chapters, even with the cheerfulness of knowing there will be a future Beit HaMikdash, here it's even getting closer to that because we see a vision of, we have a vision of the Kvod Hashem, the glory of God returning to the Beit HaMikdash. We have the promise that in that future time, after the Jews have understood and accepted and atoned for or mourned or been embarrassed of their sins and returned to Hashem, the Mizbeach, the Beit HaMikdash that is returned, will never again will be destroyed, and we will find a way to use that Mizbeach as a vehicle of atonement and a vehicle of continuing good relationship with Hashem. And we even close with the idea that this future Mizbeach will have a dedication ceremony, which at least according to Rabban, was not originally part of God's plan, but is now in the future a part of God's plan. So it's not only a return to the Beit HaMikdash and a return to Hashem having a full and flowering relationship with us, it's even more than that, a full and flowering relationship, at least partially, defined by our vision of what is good and right and appropriate. Have a great day.